welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast for October 27th. It's brought to you by One World Sports. I'm John Gibson, and sitting in for Jim Allen is Michael Westbay. Thanks for coming on this week, bud.
Hey, always a pleasure. Always a pleasure.
Well, thank you. We really appreciate it. Jim is neck deep in World Series, Japan Series, baseball, volleyball, playing around. I don't know what the guy's doing, but I know he's busy.
Hey, he's just having fun with his work. Pursue your passions.
That's right. He's pursuing it because he's flying out. I think he's going to Fukuoka, so he'll be at the three games at Fukuoka, and hopefully he gets there safely and gets back safely and gets some interviews for us. So we hope to have him back next week. So take care, Jim.
Hey, I look forward to it.
All right. On this week's show, we're going to discuss the first two games of the Japan series, and we're going to talk about the draft and answer a listener question. So let's get started.
Clearing the bases!
Okay, trivia man.
Okay. Well, since we had the draft recently, I looked up a few numbers from historical drafts.
Oh, no.
Historical drafts.
No. History lessons. No. I'm gonna answer right now. I don't know.
Since 2005, there have been four players who have turned down teams for a total of five times.
Combined.
I'm sure you know Sugano and 2011 turned down Nippon Ham.
Tomoyuki Sugano turned down Nippon Ham to go with the Giants.
Right.
Right. So wait a minute. Four players have totaled five rejections.
Exactly.
Okay. And Tomoyuki Sugano is one of them.
And Sugano is one of them. Yes. So first, can you name the player who has turned down two teams over the last 5 years?
Over the last 5 years.
This is an easy one.
I know, I know. I see the guy. He's sitting there shaking his head no.
2006 and 2008 were the years. Nippon Ham and Lotte were the teams he turned down, respectively.
Yeah, I see his face. I see his little face and his little, making a little scrunchy face, but I can't remember who it is.
He's one of the most annoying Giants there is.
Well, that was Daisuke Motoki, but he's retired now.
That's a little bit before his time.
An annoying Giant. Oh, yes, yes. Now his name won't come to me. Chono.
Chono,
yes. Chono, yes, yes, yes.
Hisayoshi Chono turned down Nippon Ham in 2006 and turned down Lotte in 2008.
Okay.
But actually in 2005, a player turned down the Giants. Do you remember him?
The player who turned down the Giants in 2005.
In order to go on to the university.
That was the 2005 draft.
Yes, the draft that was held in October of 2005.
And then he decided to go to school. And no, He later joined Hiroshima. Kenta Maeda. No way.
Nope. Yuya Fukui.
Yuya Fukui. Oh, the guy I called Teardrop. Yeah, okay. Yeah, well, there's a long story that goes with that. But basically, he was, after his first pro win, he was in tears on the podium, and the reason was because his brother or a relative had died in a car crash recently, and he really was moved by that, and he was dedicating the win to them, and so when he was on the mount, on the podium, he was crying, so we called him Teardrop. Not because he throws
That's a
pitch.
Story.
Yeah, not because he throws a pitch that drops like a teardrop, but because he was crying.
There was also Takao Suabe, who turned down Chunichi in 2009, being the fourth player since 2005 to turn down a team.
Well, thank you very much for offering that information. It looks like you've gone to the Jim Allen School of Trivia, where you ask one trivia question in six or seven parts or something.
Right. It was just going through those who had refused to join a team when drafted.
Exactly. No, it's no problem. Jim, you know, I always like to call it a trivia question, and Jim always gives me several, so.
Yeah, it's a theme, isn't it?
It's a trivia theme. It's not a question. It's trivia time. Let's spend some time with it, right? All right.
Anyhow. Well, all right.
Yeah, that
right
was,
along.
Yeah, that was good. Thank you very much. That was interesting stuff. And, we'll see, we'll talk about the draft a little bit later in the show. But
First
we got to talk about the PLCS, the final, stage of the Climax Series in the Pacific League, Game 6, which was held the day that that the show came out, a Monday. A week ago. And it was a 4-1 win for the SoftBank Hawks. Obviously, they moved on to the Japan Series. And yeah, it took a little bit longer than I thought it would. I didn't really think the Fighters were going to put up that much of a fight if you pardon the pun, but I don't really think it should have taken the full six games. And actually, when you look at the series, the Fighters really played well. They only lost by the one win advantage. The team's tied 3-3 in a seven game series with that one win advantage. So.
Mm-hmm.
The story of the game was Kenji Otonari, the left-hander who suffers from this ossified yellow ligaments disease. And that's the same ailment that Rakuten skipper Senichi Hoshino retired this year because of. And Otonari pitched like the ace of the staff. He went seven scoreless innings. I mean, he was a star.
Also during the regular season, Otonari was generally taking 10 days off. He'd pitch, he'd be sent to the farm for 10 days and come back up.
Exactly.
For his next start.
Mm-hmm. And he pitched on short rest for this game. He'll probably pitch on about 8 days rest for the Japan Series, which is probably about par for him. So that's not so bad. But if he's going to come back, he's probably going to get game three. If he comes back, it'll probably be game seven, I would imagine. And if there is a game seven. Unless they're losing, they might rush him back to the mound. We'll have to see how it goes. But he was the star that day, and your former Yokohama Bay Stars guy, Yuki Yoshimura, was the MVP of the PLCS, which, you know, I think that's a ridiculous award to hand out an MVP for the Climax Series because you get to the Japan Series. You haven't really won anything. I don't know why they're handing out. It's like a midterm award or something to me. I don't really get that.
Yeah, I kind of agree. I kind of think of the whole postseason as a whole. And so I don't know, the two stages beforehand, I would just like to see that combined with the Japan Series and just call it all the postseason.
I agree.
And I think awards should also be done that way. But it's also a revenue maker for NPB.
Yeah.
Having different sponsors for the two tournaments, basically.
Right. I understand that part. And they can still sponsor, sponsor at the end of the Japan Series, say, okay, well, we're going to give this guy an award for his work. We're going to recognize him for what he did in the PLCS or the CLCS. And he helped the team get here to the Japan Series. Congratulations. You have to stop and give the guy an award in the middle. But anyway, if we're going to talk about the PLCS MVP, we have to talk about the CLCS MVP, and that was Oh Seng Hwang, the closer for the Hanshin Tigers. And for some reason, he was named the MVP when it should have really been Mauro Gomez of the Hanshin Tigers, who had 8 RBIs. And, you know, I don't know. It's a ridiculous award. I don't even know what they're thinking. But
yeah, Gomez was just hitting up a storm, even during the regular season. He led both leagues in RBIs with 109.
Yep.
Brad Eldridge was second with 104. So that was a kind of a close race there.
Well,
and of course,
Brad made it really close. Brad made it really close by dropping off the face.
Yeah, he really had a bad end of the season.
Yeah. Well, from July, late July on, he was. He was like one of those persons of interest, like we'd be interested in seeing your bat again. But, you know, that happens. That happens to players. And hopefully, I honestly hope he wasn't injured and then he can come back, because I didn't see anything. He didn't have the same swing. He didn't have the same confidence at the plate. And you could see that. And that, I don't know if it was because they told him to stop striking out or because he was striking out so much, but maybe somebody told him something or wanted to change something, and that just wasn't working for him. I don't know what it was.
Yeah, well, I've heard of managers complaining about all the strikeouts, but with some of these guys, you've just got to let them be all or nothing.
Mm.
And they are going to produce for you, even though they are going to really mess up a few times.
Yeah, I agree.
Or quite a few times with the strikeouts. But I think that the pluses outweigh the minuses when you let them go ahead and continue with their swing, even when they are piling up a lot of home runs.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you know, when we talked to Ernesto Mejia with the Sabre Lions, remember he said, hey, look, I don't worry about the strikeouts. What I worry about is my average and getting runs in. And if I can do that, if I can be productive and hit the ball hard, I'm going to do that. So whatever they did or whatever changed him, I hope it changes back and he has a good year next year. But let's talk about game one of the Japan series now. It was a really exciting, and it was kind of, I mean, it was borderline snoozer kind of blowout, but then it was a couple pitches away from being a really good game. It was a 6-2 victory on Saturday for the Hanshin Tigers. Mm-hmm. They won game one. Randy Messenger was facing his former Tiger teammate Jason Standridge in a showdown of imports on the mound. And I was exchanging tweets with a Tigers fan. He was a follower of me on Twitter. And he was upset that Hanshin gave up two runs in this game. I guess he wanted a shutout. And he said something to the effect of, you know, a 6-0 game has a lot more impact than a 6-2 game. And I'm like, no, it doesn't.
That sounds very Japanese, actually. You want the psychological advantage right from the start of the series.
Yeah.
It's the same psychological advantage you want by bunting in the first inning to score that first run.
Well, whatever. I mean, I don't think he was Japanese. I don't know, but I'm like,
right, but
no.
This is the thinking that is just ingrained in a lot of the old timers here in Japan.
Yeah, I don't know if it's the old timers or the new timers. All I said was, hey, you know, it really doesn't matter. What matters is who's pitching tomorrow. You know, it doesn't matter how many runs you give up on Wednesday. It matters who's pitching on Thursday. But Gomez and Matt Merton, the batting champion, the CL batting champion, each had a couple hits, and Gomez had 3 RBIs, Merton had 2 RBIs. It was really good. They, again, when Randy Messenger was on the show, and Jim challenged him by saying, well, Randy got it wrong, you know, in the interview, Randy got it wrong, and he said it flat out, and he said these two guys were the middle of that lineup has been carrying this team, and they hit, and they carried them to that victory in that series, and that was you know, that was basically it. I don't.
Yeah. Well, Kudo, who will take over as manager for the Hawks next year, his piece in Nikkan Sports today, he basically said that if he were in charge, he would put a mark on Toritani. Because when Toritani gets on before Gomez, he scores.
Yeah, it really changes the complexion, yeah.
And it also reflects in the season totals because, you know, Gomez, as mentioned before, was first in RBIs with 109, and Toritani was fourth in runs scored with 96 for Hanshin.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I always like to say, be an RBI, you know? Be that guy getting knocked in, and that counts for so much. And you know how Jim really looks at run production and likes guys who score runs because that means they're getting on base. And that, that changes the complexion. But of course, those guys have to come through. And in the case of Gomez, he had a bases loaded single that knocked in a couple runs, but he had a double that knocked in the first run. And then Merton came up with a 2-out hit, and then Kosuke Fukudomi came up with it, and I guess Merton's hit was a double, and then Fukudomi doubled, and it was 6-0, and Standridge was gone after four and two thirds innings. So, it all starts with their pitching, and I think Randy Messenger, who has proven to be the ace and is really the big guy in that rotation, he pitched well. He made a really nice play on a bunt, nailing a runner at third.
Yeah, that was a really good play, throwing to third base.
Yeah, and I mean, I've never, you know, I didn't know that he could field that way. I really have never seen him make that play. I was, as big as he is, you think it's really hard to unwind all the, you know, arms and elbows and legs and and get everything into position to throw, but he had really good footwork, good balance, and he made a good throw over there very quickly. I mean, he was awesome.
I think a lot of pitchers who come to Japan, they can't do that when they first get here, but they learn quickly.
Because they get a lot of practice. In game, yes.
And exactly. So they learn that you still have to go after the lead runner when possible.
When there's an opportunity, I agree. And, you know, the only thing I was tweeting about this is that I didn't understand why Yu Takawada, the skipper of the Hanshin Tigers, decided to bet Yamato Maeda in the eighth spot when he's got a really weak hitting catcher in Fuji batting seventh, and I didn't get it, and I tweeted about it, and I'm like, you know, I don't understand this. This is weird.
Double cleanup.
Yeah, the only thing they're going to be cleaning up is their bats with a towel. you know, and I thought it was going to cost them because Fuji came up in the fifth inning, and they could have really broken the game completely open. And he ended up grounding out to second to end the inning. And I wrote on Twitter, I said, well, they just used Fuji to escape this inning, you know. And the inning before, he had a chance and he grounded out to second with guys on base. So he was leaving guys all over the bases and they just were picking on him. And I thought Yamato he's a different, even if he can't, you know, he started the season really hitting a lot of line drives, really doing well. Even if he can't do that for you, he's a lot faster. If he chops something, he can beat it out, and that could extend the inning or get a runner home from third or something. I just thought, you know, eighth was not the spot for him. But, of course, he batted eighth again in game two with Tsuruoka batting seventh. And I'm like, and we'll get to that in game two because I think that was the downfall, essentially, of the Tigers because, as Jim pointed out, these guys in the middle of the lineup, the Toritanis, the Gomezes, and the Mertens, they really carry. And even Fukudome has really been playing well since, you know, early to mid-September. He's been very productive for them.
Yeah, the last month or two, yeah, he has been.
But after that, there's really nobody to do anything. if they get a run out of those guys, that's like gravy. I don't think they have high expectations for them either. So it was just weird. I didn't really understand that.
They're in the lineup for defense.
Yeah, well, put them lower.
After the pitcher.
I'd like to see Randy just, you know, take some good cuts up there. Anyway, I mentioned this also on Twitter too, that when the Tigers grabbed the lead, I think it was the fourth inning that they got the lead. When Gomez knocked in that first run, it was their first lead in a Japan Series game since 2003, Game 5. Because in 2005, when they went to the Japan Series, they never led.
Yeah, Lotte just dominated them.
Yeah, and they never led in a sweep by the Chiba Lotte Marines, four-game sweep. And they never, ever had the lead. And the closest they came to winning a game was a one-run game in Game 4. So they won a game, it was game five of the 2003 series, also against the Hawks, and they took the lead in the sixth inning of that game, and they ended up winning it 3-2, and that was the last time they had a lead in a Japan Series game. So that I thought that was...
Yeah, that's going back a while. Well, at least it's not going back to 1985.
Yeah, well, it isn't. And
like almost everything else is.
Yeah, I think everybody... I mean, I've seen those highlights now on TV, the 1985 series when they closed it out, and I don't know what Osaka is expecting. I don't know what all the Hanshin fans are planning to do, but yesterday I think they were really on a high because they got that first victory, and then I think that just kind of hit the skids today with the way they performed. They didn't have much going on tonight.
Well, with game one, I had kind of thought that Stanridge pitched better than Messenger until I looked at the actual numbers. It's just, you know, you could have an impression watching something, but then when you actually look at the data behind it,
right,
you get something completely else. Like, I thought Stanridge was trying to nibble at the corners and such, but he only went three balls to three batters, full count only once, whereas Messenger went full count, eight times? And Stanridge, he gave up those three times he went to three balls. They all three became walks, whereas Messenger only walked one, despite going full count eight times.
Hmm.
So I just kind of thought, I must not have really observed well the two pitchers, because the numbers were just something that I didn't actually see.
Well, and we'll talk about this. Yeah, we'll talk about this when we talk about game two. But for Jason, I liked his start, and he throws hard, but his thing is his slider, and he gets guys out with that slider. And mm-hmm. and when he gets them looking for the slider, he knows how to throw it in different locations, or throw a different, throw a fastball, or throw something else completely, entirely to get him out. And mm-hmm. but that slider is his out pitch, and then. Or not his out pitch, but one of his main pitches, one of his staple pitches. And I think the slider to Merton was the worst of the bunch, because that just found too much of the plate and didn't really have a lot of break on it. And Matt he smacked it pretty good. So
first double that Gomez hit, that one was high and inside, and Gomez just really. It was a bad pitch that Gomez got a hold of, basically.
Yeah, I think, and I know you listen to all the shows, and the thing that when we did the interview with Mauro Gomez and had him on the show, I pointed out that he's really tough on pitches on the inside part of the plate. Mm-hmm. He's a monster on them. I saw that from the first couple games, especially when the Giants were trying to pitch him inside early in the season, and I said, this guy is going to, if they're going to pitch
him hard.
Yeah,
it was high and inside, not an easy pitch for most people, but Gomez really got a hold of it.
Yeah, that's his happy zone. So when the heat maps come out, the book with the heat maps come out next year, I think you're going to see a bright red on anything inside, whether it's a high and in, middle in, or down and in. He just eats that stuff up.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I think we're going to see that. So.
On to game two.
Okay. Well, I didn't think Jason was pitching great, and I didn't think Randy was pitching bad. I thought they were fairly, mm-hmm. Those first three innings, I think, Jason had to do more work to get out of an inning. And I think in one particular case, was the walk that he ended up issuing to Hukudome in that fourth inning, and he had to make extra pitches to get Fujii.
Mm-hmm.
And in the top of the fifth, Randy shut the door on the Hawks 1-2-3, and Jason had to come right back out to the mound
mm-hmm.
after working hard to get out of that fourth inning. And I just think it just got to him. He is, and I would know this, he's not the youngest chicken in the coop. And I just think that wore on him, and he started to get some pitches up. So
yeah, the other thing was. The SoftBank batters were helping Messenger by swinging at the first pitch.
Well, because he threw a lot of first pitch fastballs.
Yeah, well, five of them were put into play. So, and then three no ball one strike pitches were also put into play. So that's a total of 11 pitches, which were balls in play, mostly outs.
Yeah. Yeah,
so Messenger was really helped by the Hawks going after pitches early.
Yeah, and he did what he does, which is establish that fastball early, and he was throwing pretty hard, and he had really good movement, and they weren't making a lot of contact, and then he started going to his other stuff. I mean, pretty textbook stuff. He wasn't, he was just mean. He's just mean and nasty. I like him. I like some Messenger. All right, on to game two. Now, tonight's game was pretty good, much closer game, a 2-1 victory for SoftBank. Yeah, kind of a surprise with Shota Takeda throwing the way he did. And this is a kid who kind of came out of nowhere.
How old is he? So he looks so young and fresh and skinny.
Yeah, he's 21. And he is young and fresh and skinny. And I remember, he came on in the second half of a season in 2012, and he won a bunch of games, I think he won six or seven of his first starts and, you know, looked like he was just going to win a whole bunch of games. And then last year, he had some injuries to deal with. He had some injuries to deal with this season, but he had been up and down this season. He wasn't exactly great, but he was great at times. But tonight, he throws, was it six perfect innings?
Five perfect innings.
Perfect innings, and then he gives up a hit and a run in the
It was 5 2/3
in the sixth. Yeah, so I was close. Yeah, and then and that was basically it for the runs that he gave up. And I was watching the game early, and I'm like, well, this guy's throwing big lollipop curves in the first inning, and throwing all kinds.
Yeah, I saw some of those big curveballs, and I'm like, wow. And they were only, what, 87 kilometers per hour?
Yeah, and I'm like, well, what's your plan for the next time you see these guys? Are you going to be throwing the same kind of stuff? But the thing that I noticed, I kept seeing the Tigers batters wait for fastballs, and they would, when they finally got some, they would swing at them, even if they were out of the zone, because they were finally seeing something straight.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. Takeda was hitting spots. You know, he was dropping curves low in the zone, dropping sliders high in the zone. He was throwing every kind of junk pitch he could throw in every location on the heat map, you know.
Well, he got 12 ground out.
Well, he got them.
7 innings?
Yeah, he got them because people didn't know it was coming and they didn't know where. They couldn't. I was listening on the radio on my way back from work, and one of the, I think it was, speaking of Daisuke Motoki, the former Giant, he said, look, if they want to get some hits, they're just going to have to pick one and sit on it and wait for it to come, because he's throwing all kinds of different pitches. So, you know, just wait for one and take a hack at it. Otherwise, you're going to keep making outs. He's throwing it for strikes. You got to swing.
Well, it took a pinch hitter, Kano.
Keisuke Kano, yeah.
To finally get a hit off of him.
And that came with two outs in the sixth inning, right?
Yeah, that was two outs in the sixth inning. Their first hit, their first base runner. And then Nishioka followed that with a double to right.
Tsuyoshi Nishioka, right? Yep.
It was right up the right field line into the corner, and Kano scored from first for the Tigers' only run. And, man, Takeda was really pitching well. He just had them all fooled.
Yeah, I didn't know if it was brilliance or magic, you know?
Yeah, well, the thing is, you know, when you see somebody do that sort of thing, you kind of expect them to get a lot of strikeouts. And he did strike out, what, five, I think?
Uh-huh.
And that's not really the number of strikeouts I would expect with somebody changing speed so much and throwing this variety in there to keep the batters off balance. He was pitching to let them hit the ball.
Well, I don't know. I don't know that he was throwing. I don't know that he was changing speeds all that much. Although one of the channels I was watching early on said that he had thrown almost about 30 pitches, and 11 of them were fastballs, and 11 of them were, you know, off speed pitches or something to that effect. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, that's not true. I haven't seen 11 fastballs. You know, I think you need to check your gun,
I think,
or whatever it is.
That's what they just call a straight.
Yeah, but yeah.
Whether it's fast or not doesn't matter.
Yeah, it just doesn't have that much of a wrinkle in it. Well, like I said, I kept thinking, well, this just got to be a matter of time. But I kept looking at the swings and the approaches of the Tigers, and they weren't changing. They were all looking for fastballs. And like I said, when he started to throw some fastballs, he kept them out of the zone, and they would chase him anyway.
Uh-huh.
So, maybe
they'd result in a ground ball out.
Yeah, maybe he was pitching to contact. Maybe that was his plan. But here's the thing, is I tweeted, I thought when it got to be the sixth inning and the seventh inning, I said, okay, well, and we all know that Akiyama is a really good postseason manager. And I said, well, what was the expectation here tonight for this kid? Did they expect, let's see where we are and evaluate after five innings. Let's let him throw X number of pitches and see where we are in the game, what the score is, what we have, what the opponents have. Or did they say, well, I think we're going to get seven great innings out of this guy of one run ball, so let's just throw him out there, and I'll be back to take him out in the to Lipton for a pinch hitter in the eighth inning. I don't think that that was the case.
Well, that's what they got. They got 108 pitches out of him through seven innings, allowing just one run on three hits. And the first 5 2/3 perfect.
Yeah.
I can't think they could have imagined anything better than that.
And I don't know. Obviously, like I said, them having to go those six games in that PLCS round, the final stage, meant that they couldn't get Otonati back on the mound for this game. Well, they could have pitched him again on short rest, to be honest. It wasn't that big a deal. I think they want to pitch him at home, first of all. And I think, like you said, he had been pitching. He would throw and he would go down to the farm and he would come back and pitch again after 10 days. So I think they want to get him as much rest as they can because they're probably going to use him. I would imagine game six, to be honest, if it comes to that, I would get him back out there and try to push it to game seven because they're on the road. But
I see him throwing on Tuesday and
He could come back on the weekend.
Come back on the weekend, probably for game seven, though.
I would imagine seven is the most likely.
Uh-huh.
It just depends on what he does, you know, on Tuesday. But either way, I was wondering what they were going to do with their rotation because it hasn't really been all that great. And remember, that this is a team that stumbled going down the stretch, losing 8 of 9 at one point, and then finally winning that last game against Oryx to clinch the championship, the Pacific League championship. And then promptly went 3-3 against the third place team in six games at home.
And yeah, I really didn't think, I was really starting to think Nippon Ham was going to do it.
Yeah, I was really never convinced so much, but I was more concerned at why what is making the Hawks play so poorly, or is it?
It was Tanaka. Tanaka was just owning the Hawks. Yeah, I thought that he should have been the MVP of that series too, although he was on the losing end.
Oh, Show.
Show, yeah.
Yeah, Show Tanaka. Show, yeah. Show Tanaka was playing. He was playing well, but I don't know about owning. He had his shots. You know, he cracked a couple home runs here and there. But I thought it was Nishikawa who really played well against them in that situation. But I think here's the other thing: is we know that Masahiko Morifuku is a really good pitcher against left-handers, and we know Hideki Okajima is really good against left-handers, but they didn't get a lot of use in that series. And so I was thinking, was this more of a case of the Fighters playing really well or the Hawks just not playing well at all? And I wondered if it was going to carry over, and it looked like it had carried over in the first game of the Japan series. And then all of a sudden tonight, they played really sharp defense. They played really well. Mm-hmm. And I think a really big play in this game occurred.
Seventh inning when
Toritani was on first, he had a leadoff infield single. And then Mauro Gomez was up at the plate and a pitch got away from Hosokawa a little bit. And Toritani,
it bounced off of his chest protector.
Yeah. And, Toritani decided to take that gamble and go to second base. Now, you know, if it's me, I'm thinking, well, this is my cleanup hitter, and he has hit so well in the postseason so far. I'm just going to wait here and see what he does and give him a chance. And I think, you know, the first and second with nobody out, Merton coming up is a lot different from first and second and one out and Merton coming up. And, you know, it didn't turn out well. They gave that out away.
Toritani has the speed, which I think, and the confidence to try to pull this off.
Mm.
And getting into scoring position is what I think his main goal was.
Obviously.
Because Gomez, with runners in scoring position, hit .321 last season and was ranked in ninth place in the Central League. So,
Gomez is really good
with runners in scoring position.
Yeah, you mean during the regular season here?
During the regular season, right. Okay. And in postseason, man,
yeah, he's been,
I haven't seen the numbers, but I'm sure it's higher.
Well, he's been really good. He's been really productive. But, you know, I understand the extra base, you know, getting that and trying to get into scoring position in a situation in which you guys are the team's behind and you want to do what you can to try to get in. Get even. And I talked about that on the show a long time ago too, how teams want to get even because it just changes the whole complexion of how you go about pitching. And Yeah, I understand it, but I just, you know, the way those guys have been hitting it in the four and five holes, I just wouldn't have risked it. But anyway, I don't think they had great expectations for Nomi either, and he pitched fairly well. I mean, the home run, he gave up a home run to Lee Dai-ho, and
that was big.
It was a massive home run.
That was a no doubt about it homer when it left the bat.
Yeah, that was just unfortunate. But, you know, I think those things are going to happen when you have a guy like Nomi on the mound. And, again, one of the Tigers fans who is tweeting tweeted to me, I don't know that Nomi was the best option for tonight's game. I said, well, I mean, this to me, in my estimation, was the best rotation in the Central League. Other than the Yokohama Bay Stars. But I think if you look at the numbers, inside the numbers, and don't just count the wins for the Yokohama Bay Stars, they had four guys with all those wins. But I think this was the most consistent, and when you look at the numbers, the most effective rotation of regular pitchers with Nomi and Fujinami and Messenger and Iwata.
Nomi was very effective tonight.
Yeah.
I didn't really see any problem with his performance.
Exactly. So
six innings kind of seemed like he was being denied. He only threw 64 pitches.
Yeah, I mean, he was fine.
He threw less pitches than Takeda did.
That's true.
Even though it's just one inning difference.
Yeah, so I thought, I think you just roll him out there. I think this is a good staff. I think you get a guy with some playoff experience in Nomi, and you throw him out there. And, you know, I'm kind of concerned about Fujinami on the road, but I just think you just roll him out. I mean, you know, they're all – you got another right-hander and another left-hander.
And
the Tigers are going to be
fine.
The Tigers'
bullpen did the job. They got the next nine batters out in a row.
Yeah,
their
pitching wasn't the problem tonight. Their problem was –
I think that they can now have confidence going into Fukuoka – that their bullpen is stable.
Yeah, I think the bullpen wise, they can match up fairly well with you know, if they have a one run lead situation and they have to protect it and they have to get seven or eight outs, I think they feel fine getting them. But their problem again wasn't pitching tonight. I think when Gomez goes 0-for-3 and Merton is 0-for-4 and Fukudome is 0-for-4 and all the guys they used in that seven hole didn't, you know, none of them got a hit. You know, Yamato doesn't get a hit. You know,
pinch hitter. Oh, that was that was in the nine hole, not the seven hole.
Yeah, not the seven. So I just think when you don't hit, it doesn't matter what your pitchers do too much. You know, you got to get some runs on the board. So we didn't get your prediction for the series. So now that it's 1-1 and it's even, it's a five game series now. So who do you have winning?
I'm going for SoftBank. Just mainly because I dislike Tigers.
Well, I don't like either one per se. I like the matchup. You know, Jim said on the show last week that he thinks SoftBank is going to win because SoftBank plays better competition more regularly. And you know, I didn't get a chance to say because the show was so long last week. I cut a bunch of stuff out. But I don't think it's about whether you play really great teams all the time. It's what you do against those elite teams, because now you're playing a team that effectively is an elite team from the other league and what they're going to do against you. It's not all about what you do. But anyway.
SoftBank at the end of the season was looking really bad. And at the end of tonight's game, this is Sunday night's game, Igarashi and Sarafate, they did not look quite as lights out as I would have liked to have seen them.
Mm-hmm.
They did get the job done in the end, but it was a nail biter going down to the end of this game. And so I kind of would like to see the Hawks with as stable a bullpen as I'm kind of starting to see the Tigers having.
Yeah, those guys have not been shut down, shut out guys the whole season, so I don't expect that to change in the playoffs. So that's what they do. they put a couple guys on here and there, and they pitch around some problem areas, and they get out of trouble. That's what they're doing. All right, let's move on to the draft. And this was the 50th NPB draft, and Nippon Ham hits the jackpot again. They have hit. They picked up this kid, Kohei Arihara. He's a college kid out of Waseda, and he's supposed to be the pitching jewel of the draft. And this comes on the heels of getting Shohei Ohtani in 2012. Now, they got Yuki Saito in 2010, and that was supposed to be a big deal. It really hasn't turned out to be. They also hit Tomoyuki Sugano in 2011, but he chose not to sign. And then they hit Yu Darvish in 2004. That's pretty good the past 10 years.
They've been getting some really good draws in the lottery there.
It's not fair. it's not fair.
Well, what's not fair is the Giants. The Giants don't even go to the draw except when somebody like Nippon Ham challenges them.
And when they challenge them, all it does is keep a guy out for a year because they turn him down.
Exactly. So the Giants end up kind of getting a free pass to whoever they want without somebody like Nippon Ham challenging them.
Yeah.
And that's just kind of one of my pet peeves.
Yeah. And they did it again. They got a little slugger out of high school who's probably a project. He's supposed to replace your boy Shuichi Murata at third in the future. So I think Murata might think about losing some weight and trying to extend his career now because this kid is in the system. But I mean, that's always the case. And then on the other hand, the Rakuten Eagles as well, they hit Tomohiro Andaku, and this is the kid, the big pitcher out of high school, Saibi High School.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the kid who made a lot of fuss or drew a lot of fuss a couple of years ago because he threw like a million pitches over a couple of days in the Koshien High School tournament.
Yeah, I thought it was also because he hit 100 miles per hour, 160 on a gun.
Well, the stories that I saw, and I think even AP ran a story and AFP, GG ran a story because he threw a bunch of pitches. I think that was the main thing. I mean,
the guys
hitting high, you know, velocity on the clock, that's nothing too rare, but I don't know, would he have 200 or 400 pitches or something over a 3 or 4 day or
two, I thought it was 350 or so.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, I said a million, so who's counting?
Close enough.
But Andaku is going to be joining Nakuten on the heels of them getting Yuki Matsui last year, who was supposedly the jewel of the draft. And then they got Takahiro Norimoto, who was their ace this past year, the year before that. And of course, they got Makun in 2006. So they've been really successful in this draft as well.
Yeah. I kind of like this because the Pacific League is definitely better than the Central League when it comes to developing pitchers. And if it's the DH that does it, then more power to the DH because I have just really been impressed with how especially Nippon Ham and Rakuten have been developing their pitchers. Oryx, I don't expect anything out of Oryx year after year, yet they've got all these pitchers coming up who are just amazing.
Yeah, that's true. And they've led the ERA now 2 years in a row in the Pacific League. And they did drop another couple guys whose arms are supposed to help them out. And we don't know what they're going to look like next year if Kaneko is going to stay with them or not. So we'll have to see about that. But yeah, some things to note about the draft. Now, I don't profess to be an authority on the draft and amateurs because I watch more pro stuff than I do with the amateur stuff. But I asked around, and 9 teams, first of all, took pitchers with their first picks, which I thought was interesting. So that first round, you had 9 pitchers going. And then the Giants took this slugging high school infielder, Okamoto. And like I said, he's supposed to replace at some point Shuichi Murata at third base. I thought that was interesting because he's basically the big hitting.
Yeah, big slugger.
The big slugger. Well,
number
he's
one
the
high school slugger for the year.
Right, right. And so I thought, and like you said, they got that unopposed. Nobody else tried to get him. Now, Hiroshima took Takayoshi Noma. and he's a speedy, strong-armed outfielder out of college. And I thought that was interesting because we always look at the Carp and think, they have a bunch of speedy outfielders. Why do they need another one?
It's part of their collection.
Okay. You talked about...
Matsuda Shacho, he collects cars and he collects outfielders.
Just add them in there. Speedy little ones with strong arms. There's a model that they have that they always go for. Now, Oryx, you talked about Oryx, and they took six pitchers in this draft. And
yeah.
We don't think they need them because, they led the PL in ERA again.
Well, the other thing about Oryx, though, is they do go through a lot of pitchers every year. It seems to me that Oryx just really, I don't know, they use up their pitchers really quickly. They develop them quickly, and they use them up quickly. And so I think that that's one of the reasons that Oryx is going for so many pitchers is because they're going to need a very deep pool for which to develop and call up for use.
They got to stock up.
Exactly. That's just kind of my unofficial, unsubstantiated observation with Oryx.
I see. All right. Well, again, six is a lot, and that's no accident. That's a plan, I believe. So we'll see how that works out for them. And then now we know the team that needed pitching perhaps maybe more so than the Yokohama Bay Stars, your Yokohama Bay Stars, and that's the Yakult Swallows. And Yakult took five pitchers. And I also noticed that five teams took at least four pitchers.
Well, this really isn't that unusual.
Yeah, that's one thing I was going to mention.
Pitchers, year after year in the draft, dominate the draft. You'd think that it would be, spread out over all of the positions. Uh-huh. But really, pitchers account for well over half of the draftees year after year.
Yeah.
But it's really the fielders who are going to probably get a chance to really make it big eventually.
Yeah, well, I think they get more opportunities. Obviously, when you're playing every day, you're going to play a lot, and you're going to get a chance to, the more mistakes you make, the better you get. And if you're only making mistakes once a week as a starting pitcher or however often they have you pitch, then you don't get enough chances to get to make corrections and adjustments. So getting back to this now, the PL got five of the top pitching prospects.
Yeah.
Which I thought was interesting. You mentioned the fact that the PL develops pitchers really well. Maybe it's the DH, like you said, having the DH and forcing these guys to pitch to every batter, not take a batter off. In terms of youth, the Nippon Ham took seven high school players, and that was the high. But Yakult and Chunichi only took one high school player, which I found interesting.
Yeah, and the Giants took two in the main draft out of four draftees in the main draft. And I've kind of seen this pattern happening with the Giants lately, where they drafted seven players in 2011, only four in 2010, five in 2012, five in 2013, and four in 2014. They are not really replenishing their team with draftees.
Yeah, we know they have enough money to go out and buy whatever they need. Except the second baseman.
On the other hand, the Ikse draft.
Yeah, the instructional league.
The Ikse draft, they actually tend to draft more than in the normal draft. Because these are just spare parts that they may or may not use someday.
Right, right. Yeah, we'll see how that works out for them, obviously. They have a plan.
Well, they've got such a big backlog of potential stars that they've drafted over the years that they don't really have much of a turnover. And, of course, all the free agents they get continues to create the backlog. Something has to be done about the Giants.
Yeah, well, like I said, I think they have a plan. They have something that they're trying to execute. I'm not sure what the other teams are doing. Maybe they just look at what's available and then strategize after that. Well, I don't know, but I think, you know, with the Dragons, and they went for four guys who are between the ages of 23 and 25. And they took two other guys who are 22. So I think they want, in the newspaper results. Business, we call it camera ready, but I think they want guys who are ready to go and can contribute right away. And that's what I would assume the Yokohama Bay Stars and the Swallows would want. They don't want projects. They want guys who can come in and help right away because they need it. So
people familiar with the matter.
Okay.
Within the Bay Stars organization and people who they can draft and put into the lineup as soon as possible is a very high priority there.
Right. Yeah. You would think so. I mean, it's so hard. Like I said, you can't put them out there right away. They've got to spend some time, in my opinion, in the farm. You know, the spring is long, but it's not long enough to get them ready for what they're going to encounter.
Yeah. And it really shows in their draft selections because the first five draftees are college and independent league.
Yeah.
And then they number six and seven are high school long-term projects.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, you say long-term and you never know who's going to develop. People develop at different speeds. Not everybody is the same.
Yeah. Tsutsugo should be farther along by now.
In your opinion, maybe not in, you know, not for him. You can't get in his body and know. But, another little nugget, I think the Cebu Lions got this pitcher, Kona Takahashi, and he's a good little left-handed pitcher for them. I think he's going to be good. And I say little, I don't think he's all that small, but he throws fairly hard and had a strikeout game, a big strikeout game at Koshien, so I think that was a good selection for them. You know, the draft is always interesting because it's such a weird and difficult to understand system that they have here in Japan. But if you guys have any questions, please don't hesitate to send them in to us. In fact, let's go to fielding questions. All right, this came via the homepage from Claudio in Toronto, and this was about 10 or 12 days ago that he sent it in, but he says, since Kenta Maeda won't be using the posting system to try to go to MLB this year due to his disappointing season, will Chihiro Kaneko do it instead? And that Kaneko is the ace of the Oryx Buffaloes. Claudio says, after Tanaka's departure last year, most people viewed Maeda as the best pitcher left in NPB, but Kaneko has had the best year this year and will probably get the Sawamura Award. I've never heard Kaneko say anything about wanting to go to MLB, but I'm sure he would love to give it a shot, and the best moment to do it is now. What do you guys think? Well, Claudio, actually, the best moment isn't for him to do it now because he doesn't have international free agency. Right, Michael?
That is correct. He's become a domestic free agent this year, and next year, if Oryx wants any kind of compensation for him, they're going to have to post him this year. Also, I am familiar with a number of major league teams who have been scouting Kaneko all season in anticipation of this.
Mm-hmm.
So major league teams are well aware that Kaneko may be getting posted.
Yeah, and here's the thing. As I saw him taking this trip, or I saw pictures of him in the airport with a suitcase, and he's taking these trips to the States. But like I said, he's only a domestic free agent. I'm thinking leverage here. I'm not thinking a jump to the States since he can't do it that way. I think it's next year when he might be able to go. But next year, he's looking at his 32nd birthday. And is that really the best time? I mean, here's a guy who came out of the corporate league, so he had a late start in NPB. I really never heard him talk about going to the States, and so you said the same thing, Claudio. I just see this whole thing as a leverage situation because he's a 30-something pitcher who is about to be a free agent. I think he wants to get paid. I think he wants to get paid now. And I did talk to one of my front office contacts in the States, and this person said, yeah, most of the teams look at him as a domestic free agent who's not going to leave Japan. Mm-hmm. And that was the, I mean, he's on the radar. A lot of teams have looked at him, but they don't. I don't think they're certainly not going to pay money through the posting system to get him when they only have to wait a year to get to have an opportunity to get him.
And well, then, the posting system became a steal last year.
Yeah, even if it's cheap, I mean, that's still money they don't have to spend if they just have to pay him to as a free agent. And here's the other thing. You go over there at 32, that first year is kind of a washout, as we heard when we had Trey Hillman on the show. He said he barely remembered his first year. He said Yu Darvish probably didn't remember his first year. That first year in the States just is really about adjustments.
It's adjusting. Pretty much, yeah. It's, yeah. Yeah, and that's why Seattle has really done a good job with Iwakuma.
Uh-huh.
Because they took him in, they introduced him to everything very slowly, they built up his understanding and a cultural adaption very slowly over the course of a year, and when they brought him up to the top team, he has just performed exceptionally well for Seattle.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that first year is critical, and I don't think that a lot of players can just go right in and immediately make an impact,
yeah.
Although that is what a lot of the major league teams expect.
Yeah, well, I think they want that. They're hoping for that. But, you know, remember the Yankees were calling Makun a number three starter to probably to quell some expectations and to lessen the stress on his own expectations for himself. But, you know, you look at Kaneko, and he's a similar pitcher to Makun. He doesn't throw as hard, but they're both control pitchers who get guys to swing at stuff outside the zone. So how much is that going to carry over to major league batters with Kaneko? I'm just not sure that he's going to be as effective. So I don't think teams want to spend a lot of money to take a look at a guy who's 32 like that. I think when he becomes an international free agent, if he doesn't already have a contract here for 2 or 3 years, we'll see how that works out. But I don't see him going. That's my whole thing. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's going anywhere. I think it's a whole leverage move. He's looking to parlay this into a bigger contract here and stay cozy at home, possibly with the Oryx Buffaloes. Maybe he might be looking to move somewhere else. But we'll keep an eye on that. How's that?
That sounds good to me.
All right, man. We made it through. I appreciate it. I'm sure Jim appreciates it. And I know it was short notice, so we thank you very much for sitting in and doing a great job.
It was my pleasure.
All right. Any questions or comments or objections or criticisms? Send them by email to ykyujohn@gmail.com or leave us a note on the Facebook page. Thanks a lot for listening. I still am taking the Tigers to win the Japan Series. It looks like I'm opposed by Jim and Michael West Bay in this, but I have the courage of my conviction, as some people would say, to stick with my guns, and I'm saying the Tigers are going to make history.
Good luck with that.
All right, man. Thanks a lot, and enjoy the Japan Series. One World Sports is the exclusive home of the Yomiuri Giants in North America and features live coverage of all Giants home games. Please contact your local cable provider to find out how you can watch One World Sports.